heritage, a legacy left by our ancestors for us, from those who did not bow to Western colonialism. In March 2003, when the United States invaded Iraq under false pretenses, it wanted to use Turkish territory to gain better and more access to Iraqi territory. But the Turkish parliament rejected the request and disappointed the United States. It was now the United States' turn to retaliate against Turkey for this disappointment. On July 4, 2003, in the northern city of Iraq, Soleimaniye, they attacked the Turkish base, captured the special forces soldiers, and put sacks over their heads. When the national pride of a country is damaged, no doubt all people are looking for a way to heal the wounds of existence. The Turkish Youth Union, TGB, was formed 3 years after the incident happened for the Turkish troops in northern Iraq. It seems that this incident once aroused anti-imperialist sentiment in them, and now they wanted to do something to defend their national pride and heal the wounds within them, something that was even hard to imagine. Bodrum, pearl of the Aegean Sea, a seaside and tourist city located in the southwest of Turkey on the shores of the Aegean Sea, a city that is always lively because of its tourism, awake and bright. Sometimes American soldiers come to this coastal city for fun and relaxation, but not everything always goes their way.
Okay, you can't go on. You can't here. You can't come here. Okay, you can't walk in my country because we don't come to our country. You are the killer of the whole northern nation, okay? So you have to go to your house. Now, go.
This was the first protest by TGB members against the United States, but the story did not end here. Homeland is a holy territory where foreigners cannot easily take a walk on. Although the police and security forces had to detain TGB members on duty, they were also happy with what was happening and they were proud of the youth of their country. Is it possible to do something in defense of your homeland and not to make your compatriots proud of you?
Let me first say that we don't actually see it as having disagreements with Turkey. They are an important partner. With this specific incident, we're certainly deeply troubled by the assault against soldiers of the USS Ross in Islamabad, or in Istanbul. Sorry about that, Istanbul.
For the fourth time, American soldiers were caught by TGB members in Antalya. The last time the TGB members managed to put a sack over a US soldier's head was a place that may be hard to believe, inside the largest US military base in Turkey, in Sirlik Air Base.
Are you an American soldier?
Yes. Türküz, Türk askeriyiz. 2003 yılında.
We are Turkish soldier.
No, you stop. No.
Çuvallar Amerikan askerinin başına geçirilecek.
Sometimes the TGB approaches are in full contrast with the government policies, but nothing frightens them and makes them stop pursuing their goals. To show their hatred of America and its colonial politics, it is not enough for the members of TGB to just put sacks over soldiers' heads. When a top American politician like Joe Biden, former vice president, traveled to Turkey, Turkish youth showed their protest in this way in front of the place he stayed. It was in 2011 that Syria became the scene of conflicts that, if one were a little careful, he noticed the existence of hidden hands in these conflicts, the permanent footprint of imperialists and Zionists. Although, from the very beginning of the war in Syria, Turkish government stood beside the West and Arabian countries. There were some groups in Turkey that were against the approaches and policies of their government and wanted to pursue the truth, to better understand the situation and sympathize with the resistance front. TGB members went to Syria and met with the important officials of Syrian government. Resistance to the superpowers and Zionist and imperialist ideology is not about one country. Sometimes, in order to fight against the colonialism of the superpowers, the borders have to be set aside and to join the sea of people who don't kneel. People who want freedom, and wherever they are, they shout for freedom, free from oppression.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Welcome back, my dear friends, to a new session of For a Better Life. This is Asma, and as your host for today's episode, I hope you're doing great and life is in good terms with you. So, as always, we're going to have something interesting to think about. Sometimes it happens that we see our life as a useless trial. We work so hard, we do every single thing in our power to achieve what we think we deserve, but every time we just fail, and it's more like building castles in the air. And every time you feel like, oh God, I'm just hallucinating. There is nothing for me. Gradually, this resentment, dissatisfaction with everything you do will turn into a snake that is poisoning you from the inside and is actually killing you in cold blood. Whenever you aim for something or you set your mind on something, or just let's put it this way, that whenever you deeply want and wish something and you don't get it, this failure will go somewhere at the back of your mind. And this is not going to be the end. You would add some more of these grudges toward life, toward all the failures that has happened to you into that record. That the record I just told you, into your memory that works like an inside enemy, reminding you every single weakness you had. What happens is that you would turn into a person who's never happy or satisfied. No matter what happens, you're just a sad, nagging, breathing being who does not have enough of motivations or driving forces to continue their life, and they're totally not enjoying anything about life. And tell you something, it doesn't have to do much with your social status, because there are too many people who are apparently wealthy, but they're actually in desperate lack of contentment and happiness. And the examples are plenty. If you look at famous people who have everything from the outside and lack important things from the inside. Now, what am I trying to say? Well, let's go for a short break and then I'll give you the answer. So stick to Arab English Radio. We'll be back in a heartbeat. Let's go for a short break and we'll be back. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is For a Better Life. I'm Asma, and we're talking about contentment. Happiness is inside you, but you are looking for it in money and foreign goods. The entire sea is inside you, but still you are looking for water outside with a spoon in your hand. Money or property is important in life, but happiness cannot be bought only with money. So that's it. What I read for you was a little piece I saw in a book, and I found it interesting because if we believe in it, then life would be easier. The whole and the entire world is inside you, yet you start searching from the outside. There's also a beautiful Persian poem that says, "You're the treasure you're searching for," which means that all the wonders starts from your inside. Your true self and the core of your existence, still you look outside. So just as I was telling you, God has made us the best of his creatures for a reason. There is a torch, a light inside of us that has to be known with us, that we have to recognize it. If we practice this code, then we'd never fight too much over trivial things that will depress us or make us feel as weak creatures whose pride is only in the things they've achieved. Contentment is a treasure, and those who have it are great souls. When you are satisfied with whatever God had given you, of health and wealth and success and whatever, you actually believe that it is Him, the one who is your Lord. Like the verse we have in the holy book that says, قُلْ لَنْ يُصِيبَنَا إِلَّا مَا كَتَبَ اللَّهُ لَنَا هُوَ مَوْلَانَا وَعَلَى اللَّهِ فَلْيَتَوَكَّلِ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ, which means, say nothing will happen to us except what Allah has decreed for us. He is our protector, and on Allah let the believers put their trust. So this is the important fact about what I'm talking. When you have contentment, then you are going to put much of your trust on the only one who owns you and the only one who have created everything for you and has put all the ways inside of you. See, when I have little things and I am satisfied with whatever I have, with my share of happiness, with my share of success, with my share of wealth, health, whatever, then I would be so much thankful to God and whatever He has given to me. There are plenty much of people who live around us and they actually lack too much of things, too much of facilities, too much of good things. They do not have even perhaps the basic needs all the human beings in modern day call the basic needs of human race. They do not have it. They lack it all. But what happens to them is that God has given them this treasure that is burning inside them. They have contentment. They have satisfaction with whatever God has given them. And this suffices for a person who believes that this world is a short journey. Still, I'm putting too much of a stress on the fact that this world is not the world of our dreams, is not going to be where we are going to fulfill all our dreams and get into whatever we have wished for ourselves. So half of our destiny is actually, all of our destiny is going to happen in a world to come. I do not mean to say that this world does not mean anything, no. On the contrary, I'm just saying that it's good to be active. It's good to be energetic. It's good to go into your life with too much of driving force and motivation. But if you do not get something, if you do not get much of money, if you do not get much of fame, if you do not get much of respect, if you do not get whatever, and if you're not healthy as others are, this is not the end of the world. You could be just satisfied with your own share, with the share that God has planned for you. And then with satisfaction, you would get into a bigger treasures. And those things, of course, exist in you. You do not have to go and search for them in the outside world, because the outside world is not going to give you much of things as long as you do not own it from the inside.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Yeah, contentment, as I just was telling you, is a treasure, and it starts from the inside. Those who have contentment are grateful people who thank God all the time. These are the ones who would think of Allah mostly in every single moment of their life. And what matters to them is the existence of a Lord, of a protector, of a supporter that is always with them and that has given them everything that they deserve, everything that that would suffice for them. Because, you know, sometimes they do not have much of apparent facilities or advantages, but when you just dig deep down, you see that you are very rich. You do not need anything from the outer world. So this happens to many scholars, and we have seen it in the lives of the great people, of saints, of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. And of course, that is the most important part of the story. We could learn plenty much of things from them. So this was all the time that we had for today's episode. Thank you to our listeners for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Mismanagement and drought conditions have affected roughly half of the landmass of the 48 contiguous U.S. states. What experts are asking these days is whether the U.S. could survive the mega drought that has gripped the country. Although the federal government has resorted to imposing significant cutbacks in water allocations to the seven states reliant on water from the drought-stricken Colorado River, there are possibilities that these tactics don't work. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. The title of this article is Can U.S. agriculture survive mega drought? Stay with us, please. According to the website of Truthout, the federal government's recent announcement that it would impose significant cutbacks in water allocations to the seven states reliant on water from the drought-stricken Colorado River is the latest sign that climate change is ravaging global water systems. Arizona will lose more than 20% of its water allocation, and Nevada 8%. Northern Mexico, which is also reliant on the Colorado River and has been provided 1.5 million acre-feet of water per year from the river since a water-sharing treaty between the two countries was signed in 1944, is being hit hard as well, with a 7% reduction in its water allocation from the river. And 30 indigenous tribes, which have land in the Colorado Basin and which, as a result of a 1908 Supreme Court decision, have water rights from rivers running through their territories, are also preparing for a more arid future. Some are cutting back their water contributions to state reservoirs. Others, in a letter to the Department of the Interior, have noted that they aren't being adequately consulted on fundamental decisions regarding water usage and distribution in the region. And this is the mismanagement. In the American West, which scientists now believe is experiencing its worst drought in 1,200 years, tens of millions of people have migrated into the region since the federal water compacts around Colorado River water usage were signed a century ago. Even in non-drought years, the growing population routinely overdraws groundwater supplies, reducing stores of water that's accumulated over vast geological time spans. In the course of just four human generations, areas that once were simply desert have been converted into water-intensive global agribusiness hubs and into megacities such as Los Angeles, Phoenix, and Las Vegas, ever more reliant on the waters from the Colorado River that are carefully stored in and distributed from Lake Mead and Lake Powell. Now, with these two vast reservoirs at only 28% of their capacity, many of those areas have to find ways to collectively reduce their water usage next year by between 2 and 4 million acre-feet, or a third of the annual flow of the river in an average year, which is what federal authorities believe is necessary to bring the river back to health. It's a staggering task. Colorado, New Mexico, Wyoming, and Utah, located in the upper basin of the river, are also facing large water supply deficits, though not nearly on the scale faced by their southern neighbors. So far, unlike Arizona and Nevada, they haven't faced mandatory cuts imposed by the federal government. California, being an older state, has more senior water rights than its neighbors to the east, and thus it is for now spared from cuts in its Colorado River allocations. That's a saving grace for Southern California, the sprawling cities of which receive roughly one-third of their water from the river. But relief is tempered by the fact that the state is facing its own devastating water shortages as a result of years of drought and declining snowpack in the Sierra Nevada mountains. Reservoirs such as Shasta Lake and Lake Orville are at or under 50% capacity. More than 500,000 acres of California farmland have been left fallow this year as farmers try to navigate shrinking water allotments from California's water supplies. The crisis of land use will only worsen next year, according to analysts. Drought conditions now affect roughly half of the landmass of 48 contiguous U.S. states. As a result, crops across the U.S. are under stress. The U.S. cotton crop this year could fall by 40%, but from Texas westward, the crisis is omnipresent. Farmers in the western states are reporting crop declines in fruits and tree nuts of up to 50%. Almond crops, which are extremely water-intensive, as well as rice and grapes, are at risk in California, where up to 800,000 acres of land could lie unused next year. Tomatoes, garlic, and other staples also aren't being planted in many California farms. And as with earlier droughts, livestock are being slaughtered in Texas, Oklahoma, and other drought-stricken states, as owners struggle to pay for increasingly scarce feed and find enough water to keep the animals alive and healthy. All of this is pushing the world's food supply chains into crisis mode. We have gotten used to an abundance of industrially produced cheap food over the last 100 years. In other words, we complacently take it for granted that crises will be staggered rather than occurring simultaneously, that the fates will somehow be considerate in metering the food production challenges they send the way. But what if that assumption turns out to be wrong? What if a series of interconnected and accelerating climate crises around the world erupt simultaneously and rapidly take away the slack from the system? What if large areas of American West not only cease to be agriculturally productive, but also no longer have access to enough drinking water to sustain the tens of millions of people who now call the region home? The cuts to the Colorado River water allocations are unlikely to be simply a one-year blip. While this year's heavy monsoon in the Southwest has somewhat alleviated the drought, it will take years of abundant rainy seasons to make up for the deficits in water supply created by 22 years of drought and decades of caliber overdrawing of scarce reservoir water and groundwater supplies. In the meantime, the American West population continues to grow at unsustainable rates. The demands on its agricultural infrastructure keep expanding, and its insatiable thirst for water shows no sign of easing. If there is an exit from ramp to this particular highway, a method to avoid the pileup just ahead, it's unclear where it is or how it can be accessed. Water rights activists have long called for more equitable distribution of water, for more infrastructure to secure drinking water in poor rural communities in particular, and for a move away from the most water-intensive crops and most water-wasteful practices in areas with dwindling groundwater supplies. Now, as the global water and food crisis intensifies, these issues are acquiring critical importance on social justice campaigns, not just in the U.S., but around the world.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss your queries regarding the upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified progeny. Today in our studio, we have with us our guest speaker, Brother Miqdad. He's an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qom. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for accepting the invitation. All right, so we have been talking about the dangers of animations, video games and screens that they bring with them, and how much aware parents need to be about that, and how much aware they need to make their children about all these dangers. We talked about worldview, Brother Miqdad. We talked about role models. What are the dangers do these screens bring with them?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, so we said the purpose of this discussion is really to make parents feel concerned and youth as well feel concerned about what they're being fed with when it comes to video games and movies and animations and serials. And this is extremely important that we are aware and realize what's happening. This is not to say that we need to kind of stop or completely throw the TV or the screen away. No, this is not possible. But at least the first thing is that once we have this concern, we can be on our guard.
All right.
And the person who is wise and who is aware will be more careful in how he deals with things and will have more filters, at least when we are being fed with information.
True.
The third danger that comes through these the screen is what we want to call desensitization. So what happens is we are born with an understanding, a very basic understanding of what is wrong. But as well as an understanding of what is wrong, we also have this inner feeling of not wanting to do wrong and not wanting to do things that are counted as wrong.
Yeah.
So from a very young age, you find that kids won't like lying.
Yeah.
Or cheating,
yeah.
Or being unfair, right? Young children understand that something is unfair is something that we don't like it.
Yeah.
Unjust, being unjust is not something we like.
Yeah.
And as they grow up as well, the moment they understand God and they understand true obedience, they're also very quick in staying away from that which Allah doesn't like. So a pure child, a child who is from a very good family who hasn't had too much screen time yet, you find that this child, if he learns that, for example, God doesn't like such a thing, he'll stay away from it, right? This pure fitrah is such that the nafs calls out and wants to stay away from that which is wrong. And the moment they see something wrong as well, what happens is a pure heart is affected by it.
All right.
Right? So if you ask people, for example, the first time that they see something that was very wrong, they're very quickly affected. So even to the extent, for example, when you see somebody being killed, right? The first time you see somebody being killed,
yeah,
it's not something that you...
it's very normal or okay.
It's not normal at all. You feel very affected by it. Some kids will even have bad dreams at night, will have sleepless night, it'll be playing in their minds, basically, that what just happened. Or if they see something wrong, right? The first time you see something wrong happening, this is how you feel. Now, if you repeat this many times, right? What happens is that we become what we call desensitized.
Used
it means that
it, yeah.
We get used to it. It doesn't mean a great thing anymore, right? It's something that we count as very normal.
It's not a big deal now.
It's not a big deal at all.
All right.
In brackets, for example, one of the reasons why, if you go on news right now in your feed, you'll find the story of what's happening in Palestine so much,
yeah.
Right? We're bombarded with what's happening in Palestine is because it makes us desensitized.
All right.
Right? So the next time you see that there was 10 people killed in Palestine, like, oh, that's every day. It's very normal, right?
It happens every day.
It happens every day,
yeah.
Right? You're not, and this is why, for example, if you find that 10 people were killed, let's say, in New York,
yeah.
Right? Oh my God, it's in the big, it's
this
a, it's
is a
red
big
line.
News now. Yeah.
Everybody's affected. People's
exactly.
Moods are affected. You go to work, people are talking about, did you hear what happened in the news? That 10 people got killed.
Yeah. We'll talk more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents A Priceless Gift to Parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Brother Miqdad, and we're talking about the animation world, the screen world, and what kind of dangers these video games, animations, and fantasy world brings with it. Brother Miqdad, you said like children from the very young age, it's in the intrinsic that they are, they hate lying, they hate cheating, they hate being unfair, unjust. As they hate all these things as a child because they are very, very pure. And when something unnormal happens, they kind of feel regret, and that's normal. But when that sense of guilt or regret becomes common, one gets used to, you call the term desensitization. So desensitization is another danger that this world is bringing to us.
Exactly. So if you look at, for example, let's say sexual content, right?
Yeah.
Or adult content. Adult content in serials, in animations, in movies, and in video games is so prevalent, it's so out there that you find it very normal. Right?
Yeah.
People don't even raise an eyebrow when it happens. It's very normal. Right? If somebody were to kind of pass, if a very pure soul were to pass by, they'll be like, oh my God, did you see what happened? Like, This is very wrong, right?
Yeah.
But for a person who's been watching and being on the screen all the time, it's very normal for that to happen. And so in real life, when they see that happen or they're faced with the same thing, it's not a bad thing anymore. It's actually a very normal thing, right? Even if I do it as well, it's counted as, okay, it just happened. Maybe it was wrong, it was a sin, I shouldn't have done it. Okay, but you know, everybody does it, right? It's very normal. And
yeah.
This is very dangerous, right? Because it's a sin. It's a disobedience of Allah. It's that which was preventing us from going towards sin was this hatred of sin, right? We have in hadith about how a true believer is not just about not committing the sin. It's also about not liking the sin to be committed. It's
yeah.
being completely, completely hating the disobedience of Allah. And this desensitization makes us very far from that. And once you are desensitized towards this thing, it's very easy to go towards sins.
All right.
Right. So take another example is the lack of hijab. Right.
Okay.
Or forget the lack of hijab, the lack of modesty. Yeah. Right? The way girls and women are portrayed, or even men, the way they're portrayed in adverts or in movies or in animations,
magazines,
or even in video games, right?
Yeah.
If you look at a simple thing like Fortnite, right? The way the dress of the women, the way the behavior of women is, and the men as well, right? In different animations and movies as well. This lack of modesty is something that we become so desensitized towards that we don't count that as wrong anymore. And then so in our real life, we're very happy to do this.
It becomes
a very normal thing for us to do this. And this is something that is very, very concerning and very wrong. This is why, for example, you find women are very easy to let the hijab go.
Yeah.
Right? Take their hijab off, or even whilst wearing their hijab, they've got makeup on, or they're very their behavior in such a way that
they're not modest at all.
Right? Okay. The true hijab is not just a piece of cloth; it's more than that. It's behavior that doesn't attract. And so you find that this we become desensitized towards it, and this is something that's very dangerous.
All right, we'll talk more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "No father has granted a gift to his child better than good manners."
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Brother Miqdad. Well, Brother Miqdad, you said that there are some things that used to be abnormal and now they are becoming normal. People are becoming used to. They felt a sense of guilt before, but they don't feel that anymore. And this process is called desensitization. This is another danger that the screen world is bringing. What else?
So, to mention something... To give another example, Game of Thrones came out a couple of years ago, very famous.
Yeah.
You find that there are, and came in the news as well, there are very strong allusion of incest in them, right? And even the one that just recently came out, just literally a couple of weeks or a couple of months ago, House of Dragons. Again, it made news, it made headlines for very strong ideas of incest. And what this does basically is that slowly as people are watching it, kind of put across this idea in people's minds.
Yeah.
And the first time we saw it, obviously it's very disgusting, it's completely something that we hate, that how could you even think about it. But this is exactly what was done 30 years ago, 40 years ago when it comes to homosexuality, right?
All right.
It was very simply kind of small allusion towards it, just to kind of desensitize people. So much so that you know what the situation is right now.
Yeah.
And the same thing with this as well. So we need to be very, very careful. To give another example, so we talk about adult content and relationships. Let me give an example of violence. In GTA 5, again, made the headlines a couple of years ago. In GTA 5, which is a very famous game, and most youth have played it, there's a torture scene where you have to, and you're playing it, right? So you have to go and torture this person.
All right.
And imagine, at first, obviously people were saying this is very gross, we can't do this, but you have to play it. You have to do it because you want to kind of carry on the game. And so people are doing it. And imagine just going there and just torturing this person. What that does is that desensitizing you towards torture, towards violence. And then it becomes very normal for us to be
so violent. So you becoming violent is becoming normal now.
Exactly.
So thank you so much, brother, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners, for being with us. Inshallah, we'll discuss more on this topic in another session. Until another session, fi amanillah, God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
say that he does have ties to Muslim extremists? I don't know.
The 22nd Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit successfully concluded on September 16th in the Uzbek city of Samarkand, where its 8 permanent members were gathered to discuss contemporary regional and global challenges. This year's summit was of particular importance for yet another reason: the formal inclusion of Iran as a permanent member in the organization, a Central Asian security body originally formed by Beijing and Moscow as a counterweight to the United States' influence. The Iranian foreign minister wrote on social media by signing the document for full membership in the SCO, "Now Iran has entered a new stage of various economic, commercial, transit, and energy cooperation." Iran's full membership is expected to become effective in April 2023. But what will Iran's membership of the SCO mean in realpolitik? The Shanghai Cooperation Organization is the largest regional organization in the world, so the mere SCO membership could bring Tehran a degree of international prestige. Acceptance of Iran as a full member of the SCO will open up a new horizon of multilateralism. In fact, it dovetails with Tehran's policy of pivot to the east, which seeks, among other things, finding strategic allies who can help the country stand against the hegemony of the West, resolving the country's banking and trade issues primarily caused by U.S. sanctions, and further enhancing its position in the Middle East and Asia. In this regard, joining the SCO is a success for Iran on both the economic and political fronts. In the words of the Iranian President Sayed Ibrahim Raisi, "One of our priorities today in foreign policy is preferring the East to the West, neighbors to remote countries." Since 2018, when Donald Trump withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal, also known as the JCPOA, the Iranian economy has suffered critically. Full membership of the SCO can help Iran cushion the blow of America's unilateral sanctions, to say the least. As the world's largest regional organization, comprising 40% of the world's population and 30% of global GDP, the SCO can provide an effective multilateral institutional capacity for Iran to nullify the crippling sanctions imposed by the United States and its allies. On the other hand, adding Iran to the SCO structure will raise the substantial value of the SCO as a regional organization. The SCO now has all the necessary players to solve regional challenges like security, connectivity, and economic development. In fact, the inclusion of Iran marks a new era of regionalism, one based on the principles of shared destiny and win-win cooperation for the region. China and Russia, as two major members of the SCO, have established a wide-ranging and close relationship with Iran over the past few decades in such areas as energy, arms sales, defense cooperation, and geostrategic balancing with the United States.
This organization and the membership of Iran can provide a very good access to more cooperation. So Iran can provide all abilities such as energy and other assets which we have to share with the members.
Right after the announcement of Iran as the 9th permanent member of the SCO, the Iranian political analyst Sayed Mohammad Mirandi tweeted, "The U.S.-led unipolar order is rapidly collapsing. and a rising Iran will play a key role in creating the world's emerging geopolitical reality. Iran's accession to the SCO has geoeconomic importance as well. It can help Iran become a hub country by playing a central role in the east-west and north-south transit corridors. Tehran has assured the SCO members to provide safe, stable, and reliable routes on the north-south corridor and at the same time supply remarkable infrastructure in its southern port, especially the oceanic port of Chabahar. In 2021, Iran's trade with the SCO member states exceeded $37 billion, which accounts for about 30% of the country's total foreign trade. Although the Shanghai Cooperation Organization was formed as a result of security concerns, the concept of security itself has expanded over time to cover other areas not traditionally considered as security-related ones. Iran's membership in the SCO is also in tandem with the Chinese policy of Asian people to uphold Asian security. Given its political clout in the region, Iran can play a central role in dealing with the issue of Afghanistan, a security concern for the SCO members. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization works to strengthen security and trade cooperation in Eurasia. Iran's membership in the group would demonstrate the country's good relations with China, Russia, and Central Asia, at a time when the West is hell-bent on rendering Iran an isolated country. For example, in August, Tehran and Moscow announced they would start using their own currencies for trade rather than the dollar. Iran and Uzbekistan also signed several cooperation agreements ahead of the SCO summit. And back in June, Iran and Kazakhstan unveiled a new railway network in a further effort to boost trade. For years, the West has been tightening the screw on Tehran to abandon its peaceful nuclear program. But with the country's recent membership in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the West's stick seems even less threatening than before. Iran can now cooperate more intensely with China, Russia, and the rest of the SCO members, such as India and Pakistan, to build immunity against Western sanctions and pressures, a game changer the West didn't like to face in dealing with Iran.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.